Module 1, Introduction to Patent Law. This module covers the who's, what's, when's, where's, and why's of patenting. To get things started, you'll learn about the different people involved in the patent process, from inventors and patent practitioners to the USPTO and its examiners. Learn who sets the stage for patent law. You'll also learn about what's involved with gaining a patent. Writing and sending in the patent application is important, but it's really just the beginning. After that comes the patent examination. Briefly learn about patent application requirements, what happens after the application is sent in, and the PTO's three-strike rejection system. Next, you'll be exposed briefly to the rules of patentability, focusing on exactly what constitutes a patentable invention. You'll also learn where patent law comes from, and finally, you'll gain an explanation of why it's worth getting a patent, discover the rights that are granted when a patent is issued, and a few rights that aren't. Who is involved with patent law? One of the most basic players in the role of patent law is the inventor. He or she dreams up the idea, known as the invention, and creates it or has someone else create it for them. The act of creating an invention is known as reducing it to practice. At this point, the invention has been physically created, it's fully operational and complete, and its full utility is known. Inventors may be employees at a major corporation, employees at a small company, or the lone individual working out of their home or garage. Inventors may invent something as simple as the paperclip or as complicated as a rocket propulsion system. Either way, once their invention is complete and in working order, an inventor may apply for a patent to the United States Patent and Trademark Office, USPTO, or sometimes just PTO. This sub-branch of the Department of Commerce is located in Alexandria, Virginia. In addition to the vast library archives of patents, there's also an active component at the PTO. This component includes the departments involved in receiving, processing, and examining new patent applications. The individuals responsible for examining the patent application are known as patent examiners. Patent examiners are fairly well-paid individuals who scrutinize the patent applications assigned to them, ultimately determining whether or not the application is worthy of a patent. Examiners check the invention in regards to previous inventions and review all sorts of reference materials, attempting to determine whether the idea really is new. If the idea isn't new, it will not qualify for a patent. After reviewing an application, the examiner will send a complex bundle of paperwork back to the applicant and expect an appropriate reply in a timely manner. No matter how wonderful the idea is, a patent will not be granted if the application is not satisfactory. For instance, does the invention outlined in the application overlap with anything created in the past? Is it obvious? Is the invention even patentable at all? Some things like ideas are not patentable. It is for this reason that many inventors decide to hire an individual skilled in patent law, a registered patent practitioner. And there are two types of patent practitioners, patent agents and patent attorneys. Both have the proper skill set, which involves training in science or engineering. Both have passed a qualifying exam known as the patent bar exam, and both may write and prosecute patents. This means they may aid in the examining process by attending interviews with examiners and writing amendments and appeals. What separates the two is essentially a law degree. Patent attorneys have completed a law program and may practice in regular courts of law in addition to within the USPTO. A patent attorney may help protect and uphold the rights granted to a patent holder in an infringement case. In addition, patent attorneys usually charge more than agents, although a particular inventor may not ever need these extra services. Patent agents may not practice in regular courts of law, but they may write and prosecute patents. The most important aspect from an inventor's viewpoint is that the patent practitioner is trained in the field of their invention. For instance, a biotech company desiring to gain a patent on a new drug will need a patent practitioner with a background in biochemistry or molecular biology. An inventor who invents a new type of farm equipment will need a patent practitioner with a background in mechanical engineering. This level of specificity is required because it is really important that the patent practitioner completely understand what's been invented so they can convey that in the application. In addition, they need to be able to review and understand similar already existing inventions to see exactly how they are different from the new invention of their client. What is involved with obtaining a patent? There are many hurdles involved with gaining a patent. The initial task is to file a patent application complete with all the bells and whistles required by the PTO. There are a number of standard forms to fill out, in addition to quite a bit of writing. An application might range from about 25 pages up to thousands of pages. In 1991, the National Institutes of Health tried to patent practically the entire human brain, or at least 2,600 DNA sequences of it, in an enormous patent application. One of the most important and involved sections of a patent application is the specification. The specification specifies exactly what has been invented and thus what the patent will cover if the application is granted. There is usually a great deal of background information involved with the specification. You can think of it as a report, one that relays all the information related to the invented subject matter. An applicant or his or her patent practitioner will need to check all the available references to make the background as complete as possible, from existing patents to magazine articles, and even dissertations to formal presentations. The more research done, the better. The reason is because in nearly every instance, there will be many similar inventions already existing. The patent application needs to convey these differences. It will need to outline in detail how it is unique and not obvious in reference to what's already out there, as that's what the examiner will do once he or she starts examining the application. In regular patent applications, the claims come at the end of the specification. The claims explicitly outline what is being patented. They're used to define the exact scope of an invention. For example, if an inventor lists claims related to an ink pen, is he or she claiming only the ink cartridge or the entire pen? If the claims encompass the ink cartridge, is the ink being claimed or just the cartridge? What is special about the ink cartridge? What makes it different from other ink cartridges? The claims set specific boundaries of the invention and help an examiner decide if it warrants a patent as is or if it needs to be adjusted. Many inventors and their patent practitioners will aggressively push the boundaries of the claims to make the patent as valuable as possible. Often, the claims will need to be rewritten if the examiner believes the claimed invention overlaps with what's already existing, which is called the prior art. The claims are very important because if the patent is granted and later someone starts making the ink cartridge without authorization from the applicant owner, an infringement case may take place. The claims will help the courts decide whether or not infringement of the patent actually occurred. We've just glossed over the basics of applications. It's actually much more complicated than this. There are several different patent application types to choose from. In addition, you need to give thought to all kinds of details, like how to mail in your application and the forms you might need to send in during the prosecution. All this and more will be discussed later on. Once an application has been sent in, the USPTO will begin the process of determining if it warrants a patent. First, they decide whether or not the application is complete based on the type of application it is. If the application is found to be complete, then it will eventually be assigned to a specific department within the PTO. From there, an examiner with the right background will take on the job of examining and prosecuting it. But this won't happen right away. It might take several months to over a year for a new application to actually wind up on an examiner's desk. But once the application arrives and reaches the top of the pile, the examiner will completely pick it apart, comparing it to anything that may have been written on the subject matter in the past. Examiners check for utility, novelty, and non-obviousness, in addition to scrutinizing virtually every aspect of the claims. Finally, the examiner will compile what is called an office action, presenting every issue within the application. An office action is essentially a rejection of the initial patent application. And this office action ends up being sent back to the applicant. The applicant or his or her patent practitioner must overcome the rejections presented in the office action by making amendments, sending in missing documents, or filing in any blanks in the specification. This task must be accomplished within a limited amount of time. If the applicant fails to meet the deadline, then the PTO will abandon the application. If the applicant succeeds, chances are the PTO will send out a second office action, where the application is volleyed back and forth from examiner to applicant in the same manner as the first office action. Lastly, the PTO may send out a final rejection for the third and final office action. As you can probably guess, this typically means that you're out. Now, this is a worst-case scenario. Applications don't always get rejected. There are millions of patents in the U.S. alone, so obviously many are allowed to issue into a patent. And if a patent is allowed to issue, a notice of allowance will be sent out. When this happens, the applicant will usually just need to send in a fee known as the issue fee. Once the applicant pays the required fee amount, the patent will be granted. Alternately, if the application is finally rejected, there are still options, and we'll discuss these alternatives later. When is something considered a patentable invention? One of the most basic fundamental laws regarding patentability is that the subject matter must be created by man. Human organisms of any kind, whether embryos or fetuses, are never patentable. Natural phenomena are also never patentable, so it isn't possible to patent the laws of physics, natural plants or minerals, and many other non-man-made objects. However, an individual may find a new use for a natural object. For example, a chemical may be extracted from a plant and used to develop a new drug. Inventions such as these may qualify for a patent. There are three basic criteria for a patentable invention. In order for the PTO to consider an invention patentable, it must be novel, non-obvious, and possess a utility. Inventions without these qualities are always found unpatentable. So let's break the three criteria down and summarize them. The first is novelty. The invention must be new and different from items that already exist. The PTO won't let different people patent the same invention. Only new inventions qualify. It's really that simple. The second criteria is that it must be non-obvious. The invention can't be obvious. So that means you cannot take an old invention and modify it in an obvious way. Combining two older inventions together also does not result in a patentable invention unless their combination results in new and unexpected results. And the third and final criteria is for the invention to have utility. The invention must be useful. It doesn't matter if it only works some of the time. As long as it provides a useful benefit, it may meet the utility requirement. In addition to the patentability criteria of an invention, there are different types of inventions. Generally speaking, inventions may qualify for one of three patent types: a utility, a design, or a plant patent. Examples of utility-based inventions are virtually everywhere. A rocket engine, paperclip, and a new drug are all examples of utility-based inventions. The variety between these objects is vast, but they all fit under the same category. Design patents are those that incorporate a design into an object of manufacture. A good example is a new design for a headboard. Lastly, plant patents are those that cover new plant varieties. Those that have been bred are acceptable, while plants growing naturally do not qualify. Where does patent law come from? Patent law comes from the laws and rules established by the PTO, a division of the Department of Commerce. All the ins and outs of these laws and rules are explicitly written out in the Manual of Patent Examining Procedure, or MPEP. The MPEP is right around 3,000 pages long, and it references many of the official rules and laws established by the Patent and Trademark Office, or PTO. There are two sources for the laws and rules covered in the MPEP. The first are the laws described in United States Code, Title 35, Patents. This group of laws is referred to as 35 U.S.C. The second source includes the rules described in the Code of Federal Regulations, patents, trademarks, and copyrights. These rules and regulations are referred to as 37 CFR. As far as patent law is concerned, you only need to be familiar with the rules and regulations covered in the patent section of 37 CFR. The MPEP includes all the relevant laws and rules you need to know to write and prosecute a patent. Within it, every angle of each law and rule is covered, in addition to the forms used to file a patent application. The writers of the MPEP have also made sure to fill it with important court case citations that have been used over the years to help establish patent law. As the laws, rules, and even the interpretations of the MPEP change, new revisions of the MPEP are published. You may expect a new revision to pop up about every 1 to 2 years. It's important to realize that the MPEP, 35 U.S.C., and 37 CFR are very dynamic and fluid. The Patent Office frequently makes changes to the rules, laws, and even the MPEP itself in between new MPEP editions. You may track all the changes on the Official Gazette Recent Patent-Related Changes website at www.uspto.gov. Interestingly, the early patent system did not bother with examining patent applications at all. An individual just sent in a patent application, and it was automatically approved. Things are very different now. Why gain a patent? After obtaining a patent, the inventor or patent owner is granted a special property right to that invention. It's an intellectual property or IP right. Intellectual property encompasses all things created by any given individual or corporation that may have a commercial value. This IP property right is granted by the United States Patent and Trademark Office. A common misconception is that patents grant the right to make, use, offer to sell, or import the invention into the U.S. However, this is incorrect. Patents actually grant the owner the right to exclude others from all these activities. Therefore, the owner has the right to exclude others from making, using, offering to sell, selling, or importing the invention into the U.S. For example, if the patent owner discovers that an unauthorized individual or company is making the patented invention, the owner may sue them in an infringement case. Once an inventor goes through the trouble of getting a patent, it seems logical that the government would lend a helping hand in enforcing the patented invention. However, this is another misconception. In reality, once issued, the inventor or patent owner must enforce the patent without the aid of the USPTO. So, if a patent is infringed upon, it is entirely up to the patent owner to initiate and finance any lawsuits that may arise. At that point, the patent owner will need to secure the assistance of a patent attorney and may need to take the case to court.